November 1st, 2001. State College, Pennsylvania. After spending Halloween night partying at a club, 21-year-old Penn State student Cindy Song is dropped off at her apartment complex at 4 a.m. She is never heard from again, but some of her personal items and a piece of her Halloween costume are found inside her apartment. Years later, an informant tells police that Cindy was abducted and murdered by a pair of suspects named Hugo Selensky and Michael Kirkowski. A search of Selensky's property uncovers the remains of Kirkowski and several other victims, but no trace of Cindy is ever found. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today I'll be covering a cold case which took place on Halloween, the 2001 disappearance of Cindy Song. Yes, we have finally entered October, and as is our tradition, our show is going to spend the month releasing episodes which cover mysteries that either took place on Halloween or have some sort of Halloween slant to them. And since October the 31st just happens to take place on a Wednesday this year, we are going to be concluding the month with a special Halloween episode. Anyway, our first case of the month is one which has been requested by listeners for the past two Octobers. It involves a university student named Cindy Song who went missing after returning to her apartment following some Halloween partying. The case was featured on one of the final episodes of Unsolved Mysteries, and is probably best remembered for the photograph of Cindy with bunny ears, which was part of her Halloween costume. Within hours of that photo being taken, Cindy would vanish without a trace, and that photo would often be featured on her missing posters. A convicted murderer named Hugo Selensky, who had the remains of multiple victims buried on his property, was eventually implicated in Cindy's disappearance, but thus far, they've been unable to find any definitive evidence that he was responsible. So this lead will be one of the focal points of the episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and we've also recently been added to Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is also on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the unsolved disappearance of Cindy Song. Our story begins in State College, Pennsylvania in 2001. Our central figure is 21-year-old Hyun Jong Song, who goes by the nickname Cindy. Cindy was originally born in Seoul, South Korea, but moved to the United States on a tourist visa in 1995. After living with her aunt and uncle in Virginia and graduating high school, Cindy elected to attend Penn State University in order to major in integrative arts, so her tourist visa evolved into a student visa. She got consistently good grades and was hoping to graduate in the spring of 2002. As she entered her final year at Penn State, Cindy was living off campus at the State College Park Apartments with a roommate and working two jobs. Shortly after the fall semester began, Cindy's roommate had to return home to Philadelphia for an extended period of time because of family issues, so for the last half of October, Cindy was living alone. On Halloween night, Cindy and two of her friends decided to go out and party at the Players nightclub. For her Halloween costume, she decided to dress up as a Playboy bunny and her costume consisted of a pink sleeveless shirt with a bunny design imprinted on the front, bunny ears, false eyelashes, and a white tennis skirt with a cotton bunny tail on the back. At around 2 a.m. on the morning of November 1st, Cindy and her two friends left the club after it closed and spent the next 2 hours traveling through the downtown area and hanging out at a friend's apartment to play video games. One of Cindy's friends, Stacy Pock, drove her back to her apartment complex. Cindy had spent much of the night drinking and was mildly intoxicated by this point, but not so much that she couldn't handle herself. At around 4 a.m., Stacy dropped Cindy off, and while she watched her walk towards her apartment, Stacy could not confirm that Cindy actually went inside before she drove off. And unfortunately, this would turn out to be the last time Cindy was confirmed to be alive. Later that day, Cindy's roommate returned from Philadelphia and was surprised to discover that Cindy was not at their apartment. For the next 2 days, none of Cindy's friends heard from her, as she missed her classes and a shift at one of her jobs, so they finally contacted the police and reported her missing. As far as I can tell, the door to the apartment was locked when Cindy's roommate returned on November 1st, and there were no signs of forced entry or struggle. When police checked inside, they found some of Cindy's personal belongings, including her backpack and cellular phone, and the false eyelashes she had worn as part of her costume were on the counter. This seemed to suggest that Cindy had entered the apartment after she was dropped off by Stacy, but some of her other items, including her keys and her purse, were missing, and the rest of her bunny costume could not be found. A check of Cindy's bank account and credit cards showed no activity since she was last seen. Upon learning of Cindy's disappearance, members of her family, including her mother, Ban Soon-song, and her older brother, Keo, made the trip from South Korea to Pennsylvania. Within days, they were granted access to Cindy's apartment, but to the surprise of the police, the Songs wound up cleaning the place and may have inadvertently destroyed potential physical evidence. Investigators did explore the possibility that Cindy may have disappeared voluntarily in order to commit suicide. 3 months earlier, Cindy had been sharing the apartment with her boyfriend until he broke up with her and moved out. However, Cindy's friends insisted that she was not depressed and that, thanks to the aid of counseling and medication, she was able to get over the breakup and was in very good spirits when she went out partying on Halloween night. In fact, tickets for a Britney Spears concert, which Cindy was looking forward to attending the following week, were left behind in the apartment, and there was also a receipt for a computer she had ordered and was set to be delivered days after she went missing. The consensus seemed to be that Cindy had been the victim of an abduction. Police did look into Cindy's ex-boyfriend, but did not consider him to be a suspect. Since there were no records of any calls on her phone around the time Cindy went missing, there didn't seem to be any reason for her to leave the apartment after she arrived home, but it was theorized that she may have stepped out to visit a nearby 24-hour supermarket she often frequented. The market was located only 200 yards away, and it was not uncommon for Cindy to walk there at odd hours. When police attempted to check the surveillance footage from the market, they discovered that their footage from the early morning hours of November 1st had already been taped over. It wasn't long before a woman came forward with an eyewitness sighting of Cindy nearly 200 miles away in the Chinatown district of Philadelphia. According to the witness, she had walked past a car containing an Asian woman resembling Cindy, who was crying and yelling out for help. A man described as having an olive or light brown complexion suddenly intervened and told the witness to get lost, because this was none of her business. While the police did release a composite sketch for this unidentified man, they expressed skepticism that the witness actually saw Cindy, as she wound up changing her story several times. Well, on January 31, 2002, the Coalition for the Search for Cindy Song, a group consisting of Cindy's family, Penn State students, and community members, held a press conference to criticize law enforcement and university officials for the lack of progress in the investigation. They made a comparison between Cindy's case and the recent disappearance of Elisa Kozakiewicz, a 13-year-old white girl who went missing on New Year's Day after being lured by an older man she met on the internet. Alicia immediately had over 50 FBI agents assigned to her case, and they managed to find her alive within 3 days. Some minority groups from Penn State campus also expressed their dissatisfaction with the investigation, and wondered why Cindy's disappearance did not get the same treatment as Alicia's. For their part, investigators would insist that they were doing everything in their power to find Cindy, but were simply hampered by the lack of evidence and solid leads. The press conference prompted the Ferguson Township Police and the Song family to cut off all direct communication with each other. Both sides conceded that some friction was caused by the cultural gap between the way police investigations were conducted in the United States and South Korea. By his own admission, Cindy's brother Keo said he was baffled by the quote-unquote constitutional restraints on police investigations, such as the lengthy grand jury subpoena procedures required to access Cindy's phone and internet records, and he wanted the police to act more quickly and forcefully. Keo would quit school and remain in the U.S. to help out in the search for his sister, while their mother, Ban Soon, was eventually forced to return to Korea in order to care for her sick husband. The case would be featured on a number of TV shows, including Unsolved Mysteries in September of 2002, but this failed to bring about any substantial leads until a surprising connection was made to a career criminal named Hugo Selensky. Now, the entire saga of Hugo Selensky is one hell of a crazy story, and you could probably devote an entire podcast to him, but here's how he fits into this case. In June of 2003, an associate of Selensky's named Paul Weekly was facing a felony burglary charge and decided to inform on Selensky by leading the authorities to his property in Luzerne County. To everyone's shock, the remains of no less than five victims were found buried in Selensky's backyard, and Weekly claimed that Selensky was responsible for the murders of up to 16 people, including Cindy Song. According to Weekly, Selensky told him that he and an accomplice named Michael Krakowski had been in State College during the early morning hours of November 1st, 2001, and saw Cindy walking down the street. They assumed she was a prostitute and proceeded to abduct her and take her to Krakowski's home in Hunlock Creek. Cindy was kept imprisoned inside a walk-in safe and sexually assaulted until she died, before both men buried her body. Now, it was established that none of the remains found on Selensky's property belonged to Cindy, as Selensky did not actually live there until several months after she went missing. But do you know who was buried there? Michael Krakowski. Krakowski had previously worked as a pharmacist until he was arrested in June of 2001 for running an illegal prescription drug ring, and he had shown up on the authorities' radar after one of his clients died of an overdose. He would be convicted of multiple felonies and was awaiting sentencing when both he and his girlfriend, Tammy Fassett, vanished in May of 2002. It was initially believed that Krakowski had gone on the run as a fugitive, but it turned out that both he and Fassett had been strangled to death with flex ties by Selensky, and the couple's bodies were found buried together on his property. Weekly claimed that one of the reasons Selensky decided to kill Krakowski is because he had kept Cindy's bunny ears as a souvenir. In actuality, the primary motive was robbery, as Selensky entered Krakowski's home and killed him because he had $60,000 in cash stashed there. The only reason Tammy Fassett was murdered was because she happened to be in the house at that time. Weekly said that Selensky committed the crime with an accomplice named Patrick Russin, and that they initially buried the couple at another location until Selensky asked Weekly to help him move the bodies onto his property. But in addition to the bodies of Krakowski and Fassett, bone fragments for at least three other victims were found in a burn pit. Two of them belonged to Frank James and Adee Keeler, a pair of drug dealers who allegedly belonged to a gang. The third victim was never publicly identified, though it's unclear if investigators have deliberately chosen not to release that information, or if they still have no idea who the victim is. It would turn out that Selensky and Patrick Russin had lured James and Keeler to the property in order to steal their money and drugs before they were both shot to death and their bodies burned down into bone fragments. Russell wound up pleading guilty to two counts of third-degree murder, and both he and Paul Weekly would testify against Selensky when he went on trial for the two murders in 2006. Selensky's defense was that Weekly had framed him by planting the victim's remains in the burn pit and leading the police there, and believe it or not, they were able to generate some reasonable doubt for the jury. They ultimately acquitted Selensky of Keeler's murder and deadlocked on James's murder, though they did find him guilty on two counts of abusing a corpse. It seemed the jury believed Selensky was involved in the crime, and at the very least, helped dispose of the bodies, but did not feel there was enough evidence to prove he personally pulled the trigger and committed the murders himself. However, the state wasted no time at charging Selensky with the murders of Michael Kurkowski and Tammy Fassett, though thanks to a number of delays and legal wrangling, he would not actually go on trial for this until 2015. It also turned out that rather than simply helping Selensky move the victims' bodies, Paul Weekly actually participated in the murders, so he agreed to testify against Selensky in order to avoid the death penalty. This time, Selensky was convicted on 2 counts of first-degree murder and received a life sentence. Anyway, due to Weekly's credibility issues, there are doubts about his story that Selensky confessed to being involved in Cindy Song's disappearance. When he was initially arrested, Selensky's attorney stated that several people could place his client over 130 miles away in Wilkes-Barre at the time Cindy went missing. A search of Weekly's computer also showed that he had downloaded several articles about Cindy's case, so he theoretically could have learned the details about her disappearance online in order to fabricate a story. It's worth noting that in January of 2014, a grand jury indictment was filed against Selensky, his current attorney, and a private investigator on allegations of bribing and intimidating witnesses, and the indictment stated, quote, Luzerne County authorities believe that Selensky was directly involved in the murder of approximately 12 human beings found burned and buried in a pit in his backyard, end quote. At the time, there was a gag order which prevented people involved in this case from discussing it publicly, so it's unclear if additional victims were found on Selensky's property who have yet to be identified. Regardless, the authorities have obtained a DNA sample from Cindy's parents and added it to the national databases for missing persons and unidentified remains, but they have yet to make any matches. Officially, no conclusive evidence has ever linked Hugo Selensky to Cindy Song, and her disappearance continues to remain unsolved. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So this is one of those missing persons cases which offers nothing but pure frustration for everyone involved. You can understand the frustration on the part of the victim's family because the investigation made such little progress, but you can also understand the frustration from the police because they had such little evidence to work with. I know there was a lot of friction between Cindy's family and the police after the Songs called a press conference to express their displeasure with the investigation. Their specific mention of the Alicia Kozakiewicz case seemed to imply that Cindy's disappearance might have been handled with more urgency if she had been white. Well, sadly, race can definitely be a serious issue when it comes to how missing persons investigations are handled, but I'm not sure it applies in this particular case, as I say the problem was not so much police indifference, but just a lack of solid leads. They had no witnesses, no physical evidence, and no potential suspects, and Cindy just happened to go missing during the early morning hours when most people would have been asleep. I think the main reason Alicia Kozakiewicz had so many FBI agents assigned to her case is because she was a 13-year-old missing child, while Cindy was 21 and legally an adult. And since Alicia had gone missing after meeting someone online, there was a lot more evidence to work with. I suppose the biggest mistake in Cindy's investigation is when her family was allowed inside her apartment and they decided to clean it, destroying potential physical evidence before the police could perform a more thorough search. It sounds like this whole situation was due to a miscommunication, but I personally don't believe anything happened inside the apartment, and I think Cindy was most likely abducted after she already left. If that's the case, then cleaning the place wouldn't have made any difference. The Ferguson Township Police believed that the Song family's dissatisfaction was due largely to a quote-unquote cultural gap between how investigations are performed in the US and South Korea. We've actually seen the opposite side of the coin in this situation, where an American will go missing in a foreign country and their family expresses frustration because the police are handling the investigation in a different fashion than they're used to. The fact of the matter is, it must be a helpless feeling when your child goes missing while they're living thousands of miles away from you, and it must be a daunting task to travel to a country where you don't even speak the language in order to help out with the search effort. Anyway, the only thing we know for certain about this case is that the chances of Cindy running away voluntarily or committing suicide seem pretty much non-existent. I know it was Cindy's own family who pushed forward the theory that she may have taken her own life because she was despondent over her breakup with her boyfriend, but you have to remember that they weren't living near her at this time, and Cindy's friends, who were around her all the time, insisted that she had gotten over the breakup and was not feeling depressed or suicidal. By all accounts, Cindy was in a great mood on Halloween night, and it seems unlikely that she would spend the night partying with friends, go back inside her apartment to drop off some of her items, and then leave again to go somewhere to commit suicide. Unless she jumped into a body of water somewhere, or traveled to a remote area, I think Cindy's remains would have surfaced by now if she had taken her own life. So the most logical explanation for her disappearance is an abduction, but the big question is how it would have transpired. The presence of Cindy's bag, cell phone, and fake eyelashes prove that she made it inside her apartment after she was dropped off, but since the rest of her bunny costume was never found, that seems to indicate that she went missing before she had a chance to change clothing, so she probably wasn't in her apartment for very long. Since there were no signs of struggle or forced entry, it seems like someone could have knocked on Cindy's door and abducted her after she opened it, or she was abducted after stepping outside to go somewhere. I get the impression that the door was locked when Cindy's roommate returned to the apartment later that day, and since she didn't seem to notice anything out of the ordinary, I'd say the second scenario is far more likely. In spite of the fact that it was 4 a.m., it apparently wasn't that uncommon for Cindy to visit the nearby 24-hour market at odd hours, and given that her purse was missing, she probably made the impulsive decision to go grab something and wound up crossing paths with the wrong person. The big issue which hampered the early stages of the investigation was the lack of suspects, as Cindy didn't have any known enemies, and the one person who might have had a potential motive to harm her, her ex-boyfriend, was ruled out. Since Cindy spent the night partying at a club, you could easily assume that someone who was there might have developed a fixation on her and followed her home. But the problem is that Cindy left the club at 2 a.m., and spent the next 2 hours traveling to various locations, such as a friend's place, before heading back to her apartment, and I'm not sure anyone would have followed her for that length of time, particularly if she was in the company of other friends. And even if they did, they probably wouldn't have been able to predict that she would enter her apartment and then decide to leave again at that time of the morning, so I think her abduction may have been completely random, as the wrong person could have seen her walking down the street alone and took advantage of the situation to grab her. The most prominent eyewitness sighting of Cindy after she went missing is the woman who claimed she saw her in Philadelphia's Chinatown district a few days later, screaming for help while in the clutches of another man. This situation is reminiscent of the sightings in another missing persons case I've covered on the podcast, the disappearance of Elizabeth Campbell. As you recall, Elizabeth was half Korean and seen in public alongside a domineering male after she vanished, leading to speculation that she had been kidnapped and forced into prostitution, and that this man was her handler. However, much like the sightings in Elizabeth's case, I have a feeling that the sighting of Cindy in Philadelphia was not legitimate, and the witness may have been mistaken and saw another woman who was not actually Cindy. In fact, I have to wonder if her account is even true at all, as investigators claim the witness's story changed multiple times, so I'd hate to think she just made the whole story up. But if her story is true, and she really did see another woman crying and screaming for help, then I have to wonder what was going on there. Regardless, it does not seem like the authorities found the sighting of Cindy in Philadelphia to be very credible. For a while, that was the only major lead in Cindy's case, until she was connected to Hugo Selensky. Now, like I mentioned earlier, trying to cover Hugo Selensky's entire story from beginning to end would probably take an entire podcast, and I don't want to become too distracted by it in order to take the focus away from Cindy's case. But the story is pretty crazy, and I'm not sure we'll ever learn the full extent of all the horrific crimes Selensky has committed. Before he was charged with any murders, Selensky was already in jail because he had been arrested for extorting money from Michael Kurkowski's father. After he murdered Kurkowski and buried his body, Zelensky kept visiting his father to inform him that his son was on the run and that he needed money to help him hide out. When Kurkowski's father eventually became suspicious, Zelensky threatened him with a gun in order to get him to hand over the money, and in total, he managed to extort around $100,000 from him. Another crazy part of the saga which I didn't mention before is that shortly after he was charged with the murders of Frank James and Adea Keeler, Zelensky managed to perform a daring escape from the Luzerne County Prison by tying 12 bedsheets together as a rope and using it to climb out a sixth-floor window. He turned himself in only 3 days later, but the escape was pretty big news in Pennsylvania at that time. Zelensky is clearly a sociopathic monster who has murdered multiple people, but all that being said, I can't say I'm entirely convinced that he murdered Cindy Song. Let's go back and examine how Cindy's disappearance was linked to Zelensky to begin with. This was all due to a secondhand story shared by Paul Weekly, the same man who led the authorities to the murder victims buried on Zelensky's property. According to Weekly, Zelensky had told him that he and Michael Kurkowski saw Cindy walking down the street, thought she was a prostitute, and decided to abduct her. Kurkowski then kept Cindy confined inside a safe at his home to have his way with her for a while, before she died. Curiously, none of the accounts of this story describe Cindy's exact cause of death, only that she died while in captivity. But afterward, Zelensky and Kurkowski proceeded to bury her body somewhere together. Now, it's been established that none of the victims found on Zelensky's property in 2003 were Cindy, but there is some confusion about how many victims there actually are. Initially, it was reported that they only found the remains of 5 people, but the grand jury report from 2014 stated that Zelensky was believed to be involved in the murder of 12 human beings, and Weekly did claim that Zelensky was responsible for at least 16 murders. I think some of the confusion might stem from the fact that a number of bone fragments were found in a burn pit, and some of them were so badly burned and destroyed that it was impossible to extract any DNA from them. We know some of those fragments belong to Frank James, Adea Keeler, and a third person who has never been publicly identified, but it's possible that they since determined that there are remains which belong to other people. But even if they have uncovered additional victims, I really don't think it's relevant to Cindy's case. Remember, Zelensky did not actually move on to this property until the spring of 2002, months after Cindy went missing. In fact, his entire motive for murdering Kurkowski around this time period was because he needed money to close on the purchase of his new home. So if Zelensky was involved in Cindy's murder, he probably would have buried her body somewhere else. And unless Zelensky decided to recover her remains at a later time, and then move them to his property in order to bury or burn them, I have my doubts you're going to find her there. But all this talk about remains would be completely irrelevant if Paul Weekly's story about Cindy's alleged abduction and murder aren't even true, and there are definitely some serious credibility issues with them. The problem is that both Zelensky and Michael Kurkowski were accused of committing this crime together, and I'm not entirely sure this fits Kurkowski's profile. Now, the reason Zelensky and Kurkowski became acquainted in the first place is because Kurkowski had been charged with several felonies because of his illegal prescription drug ring. While he was out on bond, Zelensky convinced Kurkowski to pay him to help him out with his legal issues, but of course this turned out to be nothing but an elaborate scam to extort money from Kurkowski. Obviously, Kurkowski was not a saint, and he deserved to spend time in prison for his crimes, but as far as I can tell, he did not have any known propensity for violence. Before his legal troubles, he was a married man with 2 children who ran a successful pharmacy, and it seems like his crimes were entirely motivated by greed. There doesn't seem to be anything in his background to suggest he was the type of guy who would abduct a woman, keep her imprisoned as a sex slave, and then kill her. At the time Cindy disappeared, Kurkowski's wife had already divorced him and moved out of his house with their kids, but no one is certain when he began his relationship with his new girlfriend, Tammy Fassett. We know she was at Kurkowski's home on the day Zelensky killed him, but I'm not entirely sure if they were living together at the time. Regardless, if Kurkowski and Fassett were involved in a serious relationship in November of 2001, and she was often frequenting his home, would he really be keeping a kidnapped sex slave imprisoned inside a safe there? But even if you don't believe Kurkowski was a sex criminal, that doesn't really fit Zelensky's profile either. As awful as Zelensky is, it seems like the murders he committed were motivated purely by financial gain, as he killed his four known victims in order to rob them. I see nothing to indicate that he was the type of guy who would abduct random women off the street in order to rape and murder them. The circumstances of this alleged crime really don't make much sense. Kurkowski was out on bond facing potential prison time, and Zelensky was supposed to be helping him with his legal situation, so would Kurkowski really want to take the risk of abducting someone? It's also worth mentioning that Kurkowski lived in Hunlock Creek, which is over 2 hours away from State College, so the idea of him and Zelensky making a 4-hour round trip to cruise the streets and abduct a random woman at 4 a.m. before taking her back to Kurkowski's home just doesn't ring true to me. I think the biggest issue is that the only thing linking these two men to Cindy's disappearance is Paul Weekly, who is just not a very credible source. It was established that Weekly had downloaded articles about Cindy's case off the internet prior to sharing his story, so he very well could have been looking up information about random Pennsylvania cold cases and keeping them in his back pocket if he ever felt like feeding information to the authorities. To reiterate, Weekly decided to snitch on Zelensky and lead authorities to the remains on his property because he was facing a burglary charge, but he did not tell the full truth about what happened. He initially claimed that Patrick Russin was with Zelensky when he murdered Michael Kurkowski and Tammy Fassett, but it actually turned out that Weekly himself was there instead. Weekly also initially said that Zelensky murdered Kurkowski because he was angry about him keeping Cindy's bunny ears as a souvenir, but it turned out the real motive was to steal $60,000 from Kurkowski's house, and Weekly conveniently neglected to mention that he got a cut of that money. So you can see why he might feel the need to fabricate a story about Cindy's abduction and pin the crime on a guy who was already dead in order to take the heat off himself. But there might have been another ulterior motive for this. What if it was actually Zelensky and Weekly who abducted and murdered Cindy? When the allegations first surfaced, Zelensky's defense attorney claimed that several people could place his client over 130 miles away in Wilkes-Barre at the time Cindy went missing, though I'm not sure if this was ever confirmed. But if Zelensky wasn't involved, could it be possible that Weekly himself might be responsible for Cindy's disappearance? This might explain why he had so much information about Cindy on his computer. After all, if Weekly wanted to divert suspicion away from himself, pinning the crime on an associate who already had a bunch of murder victims buried on his property wouldn't be the worst idea in the world. It's definitely an intriguing theory, but much like Zelensky, it seems like most of Weekly's crimes were motivated by financial gain, and there's nothing in his background to suggest he's a sexual predator. However, there has never been any hard evidence to implicate Zelensky, Kurkowski, or Weekly, and when you look at the situation as a whole, it just seems more likely that the real perpetrator was someone who has yet to show up on the radar. Weekly probably learned about Cindy's disappearance on the internet and decided to fabricate a story about Zelensky's involvement in order to potentially earn more brownie points from the authorities. On the one hand, I really hope Weekly's story isn't true, since it's horrifying to consider the idea of Cindy being held captive in a safe and being repeatedly sexually assaulted before her death. But on the other hand, if you completely disregard Weekly's story, then that means the investigation is completely back to square one, and there are no other leads or suspects. Sadly, Cindy was probably just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and while she was walking to the market, some predator happened to notice an attractive young woman walking alone, and since there was no one else around during the wee hours of the morning, he took advantage of the situation by abducting her. And since no one saw anything, and the perpetrator didn't leave any evidence behind, it's going to be very difficult to figure out who was responsible. The best hope for solving this case is if Cindy's remains just happen to be found somewhere, or if whoever was involved in her disappearance decides to talk. Remember, for the first year that Michael Kurkowski and Tammy Fassett were missing, everyone just assumed they were wanted fugitives on the run, until Paul Weekly talked and revealed that they were buried on Hugo Zelensky's property. So maybe the same thing will happen in this case, and Cindy's remains will be recovered. So if you happen to have any information on the unsolved disappearance of Cindy Song, please contact the Ferguson Township Police Department at 814 814-237-1172. That's 814-237-1172. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now, the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you have a moment, please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We've released some exclusive bonus episodes for our donors in Tiers 2 and 3. Last month, we did an episode about the Michael Scott Martin final appeal case from Unsolved Mysteries, and coming up very soon, we've got a special Halloween-themed bonus episode planned for October. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Carol and V-Guard B. And I also want to spend the next month or so giving shoutouts to our loyal listeners who have remained with us on Patreon since we finally launched on there 6 months ago, and I will be doing so in implements of 20 per episode. So today, I want to give out a special thanks to Megan C., Aaron M., Key S., Andrew S., Joe S., Emily P., Laura F., Sam L., Sumiko, Mary Virginia A., Amanda G., Nina J., Michael G., Lucy S., Eunice C., Aaron K., Caitlin O., Fred W., Ann W., and Kelly S. Your support is greatly appreciated. I also just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. Need to provide my thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode, and as you've probably heard, we've brought back his spooky Halloween-themed version of the Trail Went Cold theme for this month's episode, and we're going to be playing it for the entire month of October. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for another Halloween-themed episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶